1971, University of California, Berkeley. It's past midnight, and a teenage Steve Jobs and 21-year-old Steve Wozniak are driving back from the Berkeley campus to Jobs' home in nearby Los Altos. And they have something very valuable in the back of the car.
What the?
The car sputters to a stop. Wozniak, known to everyone as Woz, looks at Jobs, who's banging the steering wheel in frustration.
Damn it! Why now?
He tries restarting the car. It's totally dead.
Steve, come on, man, chill. There's a gas station up the road.
All right, let me grab the blue box.
The blue box is set to become Woz and Jobs' first product. The two long-haired buddies have been tinkering since high school, and they've finally developed something that they think will be a sensation. It looks sort of like a hand calculator connected to a mouthpiece. It's a device that makes it possible to make long-distance telephone calls for free. Phone companies charge $3 a minute. The only problem with the blue box is that it's not exactly legal. Jobs and Woz make it to the gas station, and Woz spots a phone booth. At least now, they can call for help.
Oh, thank God, there's a payphone.
Jobs picks up the receiver as Woz starts fumbling in his pocket for some change.
Don't be stupid, Woz. What do you think we invented the blue box for?
Jobs lifts the blue box up to the phone and punches some buttons.
Operator, hello?
Oh, crap, it's not working. It just connected me to the operator.
Here, let's just try again.
Operator.
Still not working. Damn it, the operator can probably tell we're trying to hack the line. They must be on to us. Oh man, we're going to be in so much trouble.
Just then, a cop car pulls into the gas station. Two cops step out. Flashlights trained on Woz and Jobs.
Holy shit, the operator must have called the cops. Quick, Steve, hide the blue box.
But Steve freezes. As the cop and his partner walk up to the pair, their flashlights boring into his eyes, Jobs stands there motionless with the incriminating keypad and mouthpiece still in his hands.
So what brings you two fine, upstanding young men here at this hour? Were you smoking marijuana?
His partner is already searching the bushes for any drugs these long-haired hippies might have stashed.
No, sir, we're just trying to use the payphone. Our car broke down.
The cop narrows his eyes and squints at the blue box.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
Wozniak stalls a bit as he takes the box from Jobs and conjures up a lie.
Oh, this? Why, this is an electronic music synthesizer.
Woz demos the blue box for the cops.
What's the orange button for?
What they don't say is that the orange button recreates a specific tone so they can hack phone lines. Jobs finally comes back to life and follows Woz's lie with his own.
Oh, it's for calibration.
The cops exchange glances and wordlessly decide this is all suspect.
Let's go. You're coming with us.
As they climb into the back of the squad car, Woz and Jobs wonder whether they're going to jail. But at the station, police can't find any law they've broken.
Okay, we're letting you and your contraption go. And in case you dimwits didn't know it, a guy named Bob Moog has already come up with a music synthesizer.
The blue box will soon be forgotten, though not the means by which Wozniak and Jobs obtained it. The early 70s and the easygoing attitude toward sharing intellectual property will soon hit the buzzkill of big money and capitalism. And these two former counterculture college kids will soon morph into tech titans.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts.
From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. On the last episode, Apple, after years of delay, finally launches the Macintosh. It was a joint effort. Jobs' team made the hardware, and Gates' Microsoft team made a lot of the software. The Macintosh was a big success, but the afterglow fades pretty quickly for Jobs, who's worried that Gates and Microsoft might eventually crash his party. Jobs and Wozniak are succeeding thanks to the free use of other people's technology. The industry term is open source software, or, depending on how you look at it, theft. From the very beginning, Jobs didn't trouble himself with the legality or ethics of his work, like those blue boxes. Jobs and Wozniak took that invention from other hackers and then tried to capitalize on it. From their perspective, technology should be shared and free. That was the whole point of open source. But Gates, an uptight Eagle Scout turned genius programmer, challenged that idea. He prided himself on developing the best software and believed people should pay for his work. And in the near future, things will tilt in his favor. In this episode, we go into the pasts of these pivotal players. Jobs and Gates must first metamorphosize from easygoing dudes in their early years to shrewd businessmen. This is Episode 2, Hackers and Capitalists. Early 1974, Los Gatos, California. It's nighttime at the gaming company Atari's office, and all the employees have gone home. But Steve Jobs is just clocking in. Jobs has just dropped out of Reed College after only one semester. School wasn't for him, but he's talented and quickly lands a part-time job at Atari, designing video games. Jobs walks towards his desk, but he's not totally alone. Atari founder Nolan Bushnell is still working late. Bushnell shouts over to him.
Steve, good morning.
Jobs grunts a muted response.
Hi.
Bushnell smiles and shakes his head. Usually his employees are much more ingratiating, but not Jobs. He walks over to Jobs' desk.
How's it going?
Good. My friend Woz made a Pong game I want to show you. I also know a way to improve the breakout game.
Bushnell leans against his desk.
Great, but there's something else I want to talk to you about.
Jobs looks up at him.
Look, Steve, You're obviously talented, but I've been hearing a lot of things from other people about you.
Like what?
Well, for one thing, that you don't shower for days and the smell alone has solicited complaints. That's why I've got you working at night, so you don't have to interact with coworkers. Job shrugs.
That's their problem, not mine.
That's not all. You're constantly criticizing your coworkers, tearing down their work, demanding they do better.
Some of them just aren't that good.
Bushnell gets impatient. Well, frankly, you're not really in the position to do that. You're really junior here, Steve, and it'd do you good to remember that.
Whatever.
Like I said, your work is stellar, but you don't have all the answers, Steve. You need to be able to work with other people.
But Jobs isn't worried about all that. He's been reading about Eastern spirituality and Buddhism and getting into meditation. And it's made him focus on his own growth, not other people's.
I don't care about working with other people.
Exasperated, Bushnell sighs and walks out the door. Jobs gets back to work without giving this much thought. He's not planning to stay at Atari for long. He does want to change, but not in the way his boss wants. He's looking for something internally transformative. And in true Jobs fashion, he takes extreme measures. Mid-1974, northern India. Jobs rounds the corner to the gates of an ashram, located up a winding road on a steep hill. His head is shaved, and he's dressed in a traditional Indian sarong called a lungi. Daniel Kaki, a friend from Reed College, is by his side. Jobs comes to a halt and looks at Kaki. They're both sweating, but Jobs is smiling.
Well, we finally made it. The ashram of Neem Karoli Baba. Wow.
Neem Karoli Baba is a renowned Hindu spiritualist whose message is that compassion is the highest virtue. Jobs heard about the Baba from Ram Dass, the author of Be Here Now, a spirituality book Jobs had devoured. Once they made it to Delhi from San Francisco, he and Kaki had to travel another 200 miles to this ashram. Kaki's relief is palpable.
Thank God, now we can take a break.
Jobs isn't having it. There's no time for rest. Enlightenment, now.
No. Let's go in and find him. I'm not waiting another second.
The pair walk toward the ashram. But as they get closer, it looks far quieter than they were expecting. There's only one man sweeping the steps. Jobs approaches him.
We're looking for Neem Karoli Baba. Where can we find him?
The man looks at them somewhat surprised and tells them that he died a year ago. Jobs' jaw drops.
Died? But I came all the way here to learn from him. Now what am I supposed to do?
The man shrugs and walks away. Kaki sighs.
Well, I guess we're going to have to find enlightenment somewhere else.
Jobs and Kaki look for another master Jobs has read about, like there's some plug-and-play guru. But when they get there, the guru is barely older than them, and nothing that he says seems all that profound. Jobs is incensed.
This isn't enlightenment. This guy's a fraud.
He and Kaki turn on their heels and are about to head out. Just then, Kaki checks his backpack.
Oh no, my traveler's checks. They're gone. Someone must have stolen them.
Jobs sighs with exasperation. All this clumsy dashing around in search of wisdom makes him yearn for the predictability of technology.
Maybe Thomas Edison did a lot more to improve the world than Karl Marx and Neem Karoli Baba put together.
He's struck by his own words. Right, he thinks. Inventing things, like Thomas Edison. Disillusioned by his search for a guru, Jobs heads back to the U.S. But two things from his journey stick. He returns as a Buddhist and is set on becoming an inventor. 1975. A meetup for tech geeks in an auditorium at Stanford University, California. The group is called the Homebrew Club. It's a gathering of people who are interested in a new hobby. Computers. Jobs is seated with his old buddy Woz at a table with computer parts scattered about. Right now, Woz is poring over a circuit board. Jobs leans forward.
What's that?
It's a new circuit board I just traded for something. I think I can use it for this new computer I've been building in my garage.
Jobs perks up.
Oh, yeah? What kind of computer?
Woz shrugs. He's a hacker, a tinkerer, and at heart, a true creator.
I just want to make something better than these.
He points to the hulking screens and giant processors another homebrew club team is working on. Jobs nods.
You know, there just has to be a way to bring this niche world of computers to the people.
Jobs looks around at the geeks screwing and unscrewing parts, discussing circuits and code.
There's a business in computers, I know it. But people are turned off by these monstrous things. We just need to make them more approachable, you know, more appealing.
Yeah, that way maybe we can get more people to use them.
Yes, and we shouldn't sell it as a kit that people have to assemble. We need to make something that's ready to go.
Woz smiles and looks over at Jobs. Jobs is thinking about something, and Woz can practically feel his brain whir.
Yeah, I've been working on a fully assembled circuit board, but maybe we can take it one step further. All someone has to do is add a case, a power supply, a keyboard, and a TV screen. Something I've been working on.
Well, come on, let's get out of here. I want to see what you've been building in your garage.
They don't know it yet. But from this garage project will spring Apple's first product, the Apple One computer. It will open the way for Jobs to become an inventor. And in time, his technological enlightenment will draw millions of devoted followers. But he will also be converted to Gates's vision of pay for what you get. And when that happens, boy, will they make people pay.
You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind.
December 1974, in a Harvard dorm in Cambridge, Massachusetts. 19-year-old Bill Gates is sitting at his desk. His friend, Paul Allen, has flopped down on the bed. Gates is a sophomore in college, with Coke bottle glasses and a mop of floppy brown hair. Allen dropped out of college at Washington State to take a job in Boston as a computer programmer. The two friends are talking about a new computer gaining lots of buzz. It's called the Altair. Allen is very gung-ho.
It's small, it's affordable, it's the first real home computer.
But Gates isn't impressed and dismisses Allen with a wave of his hand. Unlike nearly everyone else in the computer industry focused on making the hardware, Gates is obsessed with making the software that runs the machines.
Forget about it. They don't even have an operating system for it yet. It doesn't have software that anyone can work on. It's just a big metal box with a ton of switches. It's useless.
Allen pauses.
What if someone made software for it?
Gates looks at Allen and grins.
Yeah, we should be that someone.
Gates reaches for a pen.
Here, let's write him a letter.
The Altair is made by a company called Micro Instrumentation Telemetry Systems, or MITS. It's a small, cutting-edge company that's moving from making calculators to computers.
We'll tell them that we've already written the code for an operating system for the Altair.
Allen frowns.
But we haven't.
Doesn't matter. We'll figure out that bit. Don't you see this could change everything? If we could make this software, we could license it to them for real money. And then regular people will be using our programs.
Allen is a little puzzled.
But the whole computing spirit is about open source and being collaborative. Why wouldn't we just share what we have?
Gates shakes his head.
No, if they want our software, they're going to have to pay us. A lot.
It goes against the ethos of the time, but Allen shrugs. Gates may be 2 years his junior, but he is strong-willed. Allen defers to him.
All right, so what do? We write them a letter and do whatever it takes to get this contract.
Gates and Allen don't hear from MITS. So a few weeks later, Gates calls the company. MITS founder tells Gates that they've had plenty of people saying they'd make the operating system and whoever can bring a working operating system to him first gets the contract. Gates and Allen get to work. They've collaborated like this for years. They went to the same middle school back in Seattle where they got to play with early computers. And they immediately began hacking. First, it was a chess game to win. Then their computer club to score free computer time. And finally, the school's payroll system. Within weeks of the MITS challenge, Allen travels to their New Mexico headquarters to demo their software. And it works. It's the first time software has run on a computer that could feasibly be used at home. This moment marks the start of the personal computer. Gates and Allen negotiate a 10% royalty for every copy of their software sold. For the first time, a software program runs on a commercially viable home computer. But while Gates celebrates, there's a growing threat to his business model looming on the horizon. February 1976, Albuquerque, New Mexico. After securing the Altair deal, Gates drops out of Harvard and opens his first office close to the Altair makers. He and Allen found a business called Microsoft, a portmanteau of microcomputer and software. Gates should be on top of the world, but instead, he's angry and typing furiously. Allen pops his head in the door.
Bill, what are you doing?
Gates doesn't look up.
I'm writing a letter to these goddamn hobbyists.
Allen sighs.
This again.
Gates pauses and looks up.
It's a big deal, Paul. I ran the numbers. We developed the Altair's program, but less than 10% of all Altair users have actually purchased it.
Some bought the program, which is punched out on coils of paper like reels of film, and then went on to sell pirated copies.
Wow, I didn't know it was that bad.
Gates grimaces.
It just infuriates me that we're the only ones making actual computer software just so we can get ripped off by the hobby computer market. I mean, if you figure all the time we put into making software for Altair, our return is less than $2 an hour.
Alan puts his head in his hands.
God, that's awful. So what are you going to do? Well, I'm writing an open letter to hobbyists, challenging them.
Alan is intrigued.
Read it to me. As the majority of hobbyists must be aware, most of you steal your software. Hardware must be paid for, but software is something to share. Who cares if the people who worked on it get paid? Why is this?
Alan leans forward.
Ooh, this is good. Keep going.
The fact is, no one besides us has put a lot of money in hobby software. Most directly, the thing you do is theft. I would appreciate letters from anyone who wants to pay up.
The letter goes out to hobbyists across the country, including the homebrew at Stanford. It's a direct challenge to Woz and Jobs. Their club had been copying Microsoft software, and Gates knows it. What he can't fathom in the moment is how their lives will soon become intertwined. 1976, Microsoft's offices in Albuquerque. Gates is sitting in his office looking over numbers for the year. With him is Rick Weiland, one of Microsoft's first employees. Gates is only 21, but he's stressing out like a veteran CEO.
We need to do something to improve these sales numbers.
No one needs to tell Gates that Microsoft software hasn't been selling as well because of all the piracy. Weiland thinks for a moment.
Well, I heard about these two guys in Los Altos who are building a new computer in their garage. They're the guys who developed Breakout.
Breakout was a successful Atari game designed by Woz with Jobs' help. Gates looks unimpressed.
Those homebrew club guys?
Weiland nods.
Yeah, I was thinking of calling them and seeing if they'd be interested in having us make software for their new computer.
Gates shrugs.
Couldn't hurt. Plus, they owe me. They probably pirated the Altair software at some point. Yeah, why don't you call them?
He pushes the phone toward Weiland. Weiland nervously reaches for the handset. Gates looks at him expectantly. Weiland clears his throat.
Hello, is this Steve Jobs?
Yes, who's this?
It's Rick Weiland from Microsoft in Albuquerque.
Jobs doesn't have time for this.
Yeah, what do you want?
Well, we wanted to see if you'd be interested in software for the Apple One. You see, we built the one for the Altair, and we'd like to build one for you.
We already have one. And if we need a better one, we'll do it ourselves in a weekend.
Weiland looks at Gates.
He hung up on me.
Gates has been royally dissed, and he sees this as a challenge. He vows to make software that is so good, they'll practically have to beg for it. But if that scenario doesn't happen, well, Microsoft will crash before it launches.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
We get support from Acura. The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
April 1977. The Brooks Civic Auditorium in San Francisco, California. Steve Jobs stands in front of a booth emblazoned with the Apple logo. A small crowd is gathered to watch him demonstrate his newest product, the Apple II. Jobs steps forward and gestures to a small cuboid screen attached to a large built-in keyboard.
This is the Apple II.
The box is beige, with large black keys and a rainbow Apple logo with a bite taken out of it.
This is the first microcomputer to ever be completely assembled. No more kits. All you have to do is plug this one into the wall. And it's got an unheard-of amount of storage. 48 kilobytes of RAM built into the motherboard.
Techies like the Apple I, but they've been waiting for the update from Jobs and Woz. The Apple I was hand-built in a wooden case and looked sort of like a strange typewriter. The Apple II, by contrast, is fully encased in plastic, far more professional and futuristic-looking. Jobs leans over and types something on the keyboard. The screen illuminates in color.
It's the first computer to have color and sound and graphics. The Apple II has it all. And even better, it ships in June.
That date gives Apple a crucial edge because its competitors are right on their heels. By December, both Radio Shack and Commodore will have come out with microcomputers. And Texas Instruments and IBM aren't far behind. June 5th, 1977. Apple's offices. It's the Apple II's launch day. Jobs and Woz are sitting nervously by the phone, waiting for an update on sales.
Steve, I've got the figures.
Jobs' face is serious.
Tell me.
It's selling great, way better than we expected. We're anticipating we'll be bringing in $770,000 revenue this year.
Wow, that's fantastic. What else are you hearing?
Well, overall, the immediate response is positive. I mean, we're seeing regular people buy this thing, not just computer hobbyists.
Jobs nods. This is exactly what he wanted. While the Altair may have been the first personal computer, the Apple II is the first machine for people who aren't computer geeks.
But there is one thing we keep hearing, Steve. People feel like the software isn't good enough.
What are you talking about? Woz's software is fantastic.
Well, they say it's just not fast enough.
Jobs turns to Woz.
Woz, can you build a new one?
Woz shakes his head.
As much as I'd love to, with these kind of sales numbers, I've got my hands full making sure everything's running right on our existing version. I just don't have time to write a new one.
Jobs thinks for a moment.
What was the name of that little software company in Albuquerque?
Microsoft?
Yeah, give me their number.
Gates sits at his desk, leafing through legal documents. His head is spinning. Microsoft is in a royalty battle with Altair maker MITS. And frankly, Gates can't afford the legal fight. He's worried he might have to settle.
Hello?
Hi, Bill. It's Steve Jobs.
Gates' eyes widen. This was the last person he was expecting to hear from, but he recovers quickly.
Steve, what can I do for you?
Jobs clears his throat. He's overwhelmed with orders for the Apple II. It's a great problem to have, but now the guy who hates working with other people needs to ask for help.
Well, we need new software for the Apple II, and Woz doesn't have time to write it.
Gates looks at the phone, surprised. He's read a lot about the Apple II and knows that it's been selling well.
Okay, so what are you thinking?
Jobs speaks quickly.
I'm thinking we license your software and release it as AppleSoft.
Gates's company is on the precipice, but he plays it cool.
That could work. There's one thing, though. Can we do a flat fee license, not a royalty?
Gates is scarred from his battle with MITS. He doesn't want another royalty mess. He will regret this.
Sure, what are you thinking?
Gates pauses and thinks of a number that will cover his legal and operating costs.
$21,000?
Jobs answers impatiently.
Fine. But we need it ASAP.
Jobs hangs up, and Gates stares at the phone. He can hardly believe his luck. Microsoft just got a lifeline to keep going. By August, he's received a $10,500 payment from Apple for half of its $21,000 licensing fee. Microsoft is still in business. Gates doesn't know it yet, but Apple II machines will eventually sell more than 5 million units. If he'd done just a $1 royalty on the program, Microsoft would have $480,000 more than its licensing fee. When Microsoft's program rolls out as AppleSoft, it's a hit. Microsoft and Apple are both happy. The Apple II is everyone's favorite computer. And Microsoft is still in business. In fact, Microsoft's business booms so much that Gates takes a meeting with a very important investor. ...1979, Dallas, Texas. The top floor of a luxurious seven-story office building. Gates walks into the office, looking a little nervous. Gates smooths down his hair and approaches the assistant. This appointment is so important, he got a rare haircut for the occasion.
Mr. Perot will see you now.
Gates walks into the wood-paneled office and looks around him. The decor is very patriotic, decorated with the American flag and historic paintings. The two men shake hands.
Mr. Perot, nice to meet you. Please, call me Ross.
Ross Perot is the founder and CEO of Electronic Data Systems, a giant Dallas-based IT company that serves as the IT department for corporate clients. Gates sits down with a studied seriousness in a doomed effort to try and look older than his 24 years. Perot smiles at him.
So, as you might know, we over at EDS are thinking about investing in the fledgling market of microcomputers, which brought us to Apple, and of course, to you.
Gates listens carefully. EDS has a giant list of corporate clients. If Microsoft were to team up with them, it could get access to a whole new market of businesses. Perot continues.
So, I just wanted to see what you were thinking as far as an acquisition price.
Gates leans back. His company is still small, but he's not going to sell himself short.
Well, I put our value at somewhere between $40 to $60 million.
Perot has to suppress a chuckle.
Really? You're barely a startup. If I buy this, will I make money?
Perot is tacitly asking whether he would make money if he decided to flip Microsoft down the line. Gates is so confident, he smiles and responds in an equally evasive way.
Well, why would you sell?
Perot grins. He respects Gates's chutzpah.
Well, that number might work. Why don't you go home and think about it and give me a call?
Gates leaves so confident in his vision for Microsoft that he ultimately turns down Perot's offer. It's a bold move for a company that's only 4 years old. But Gates thinks Microsoft has an opportunity to grow way bigger. A whole magnitude bigger, from millions to billions. On the next episode of Business Wars, Microsoft and Apple's relationship reaches a breaking point when Microsoft allegedly steals companies' secrets and the student becomes the master. From Wondery, this is episode 2 of Apple vs. Microsoft for Business Wars. A quick note about recreations you've been hearing. In most cases, we can't know exactly what was said. Those scenes are dramatizations, but they're based on historical research. For more on the history of the Mac, check out Steve Jobs, written by Walter Isaacson.
We also recommend Hard Drive by James Wallace and Jim Erickson. I'm your host, David Brown. Natalie Robomed wrote this story. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Edited and produced by Emily Frost. Sound designed by Josh Morales. Our producer is Dave Schilling. Our managing producers are Tanja Thigpen and Matt Gant. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.